Why are top U.S. officials sending mixed messages on American energy? Both Energy Secretary Granholm and President Biden tout the importance of LNG to our national security.
Our liquefied natural gas exports have been a significant help to our allies.
Now in an election year, the administration has stopped permitting of U.S. liquefied natural gas projects. Tell the administration, stop playing politics with our energy and national security. Visit lightsonenergy.com. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
You're listening to the Oil and Gas This Week podcast with Mark LaCour and Paige Wilson. This is the show for busy oil pros who quickly want to keep their finger on the pulse of the industry.
You're listening to the Oil and Gas This Week podcast brought to you by API. This is the show for busy oil pros who want to quickly keep their fingers on the pulse of the industry. Thanks for joining us for episode 337. What's up, Mark?
What's up is it's not quite 337, but we're heading to our March mixer. It's the last Thursday of the month, which I believe is the 28th.
Yes, it is the 28th.
Follow us on LinkedIn. Just sign up now. The last one sold out. This one's looking like it's going to sell out. It's a blast.
Oh, it was such a great turnout last time.
Yeah. So if you're in the Houston area, make sure you grab a ticket to that. It actually helps us fight human sex trafficking with Rent M. And then stay tuned. We have a mixer coming up in Lafayette, Louisiana. And we have one coming up in, of all places, the Tampa area of Florida. And then—
Well, really?
Yep. And then Calgary. And then we're planning the one in Dallas. So we're going to be—
Tampa?
Multi-coastal.
That's so bizarre to me.
There's actually a pretty stout—
Well, I get it because it's Florida, but like, I just never thought of it.
Yep. Our buddy Warren is—
Oh, that makes sense.
Is running point on that one. We already have sponsors lined up. Looks like we're going to be in a marina overlooking the St. Petersburg Bay.
Nice.
It's going to be a hell of a time. Yeah. There's a lot of oil field service companies in Florida and they feel no love, Paige.
I get that.
They actually kind of keep it quiet on the lowdown, and we're going to change that.
Good.
I'm damn proud to be part of the oil and gas industry.
Good for
stay
them.
Tuned, Florida. We're headed your way.
Oh, speaking of good things, you should hear this week's review.
I'm going to let you read it.
2 stars, baby. 2 stars. Factually incorrect. This podcast puts out some valuable info, but it's so layered with incorrect anti-environment statements that it isn't credible. For example, in January 2024 podcast, he says the environmentalists are idiots because they think LNG poses environmental risks if there are leaks. He says it's not like oil, gas evaporates. It's gone. What? So problem solved, it evaporates with the extremely harmful methane going up? They are hell-bent on denying any environmental concerns related to the industry. Why? They're better off addressing these concerns seriously. They keep repeating how the world needs U.S. oil and gas, and 3 billion people will die if the U.S. doesn't export it. Their energy paid by the lobbying group, American Petroleum Institute. If you like hearing an ad for the industry, then go for it.
Who is this from?
Somebody in the United Kingdom.
Valade. Just a couple things, Valade. First thing, I don't ever remember talking about 3 billion people will die, because the truth is, if we get rid of hydrocarbons, it'll probably be more than that. Second thing is, you didn't listen to what I said.
Clearly.
The article, remember, this is a show where we talk about news article. The news article was about an environmental group that was opposing an LNG facility because they were worried that the coastline would be damaged if there was a leak, just like that would happen with the BP Macondo disaster. So all I said was, that's not going to happen because unlike BP Macondo, which lost a whole bunch of crude in the Gulf of Mexico, they ended up in the Gulf Coast states, the LNG would simply evaporate. As far as the methane, you can consider that dangerous. It's actually building block of life, whatever. But I've been waiting, Paige, for somebody to say that we're changing what we do because of our sponsors. We've had a lot of sponsors for this show. It's never changed the format of the show or what we talk about or our opinions on stuff. Our sponsors, by contract, so legally, have no editorial control for that exact
reason. No.
And if you don't like our API sponsor, sorry, they're the ones paying the
bills.
Bro. And we love those people. We support everything they're trying to do.
Well, not only that, they're not just a lobbying group. They're incredibly involved with our industry on recommended practices. They help.
And on standards,
they get. Yeah.
Right? They keep this industry safe.
Right.
And they keep this industry from damaging the environment. I am an educated environmentalist. I do think that we call out the bad things our industry does.
I put some of those articles in here because the example needs to be shown. Yeah.
But I'm sorry that every day we don't talk about the damage we've done to the earth, because we don't damage the earth every day.
This person literally listened to one episode and made up their mind is what happened.
Still appreciate the review. Appreciate the 2 stars. If you want to be like Validé from the UK
and, that rhymed.
And give us grief, feel free to do it, because I'm telling you now, Paige is going to have fun with it.
Bring it. Oh, I can't even wait. Okay, so let's get into the news stories, because we're going to start with protesters. Just Stop Oil protester convicted after climbing on M25 gantry.
So convicted with sentences. She's sentenced by the majority of basically a vote of 10 to 2, causing a public nuisance. And that's part of the Police Crime Sentencing Court Act of 2022, Aylesworth Crown Court. Now, one of the things that prosecution brought up is they brought up a dozen people who missed their airline flights because of the traffic delayed because of her climbing this gantry. I don't want to talk about anything else for a second, just that. This young woman is actually lucky. Her name is Cressanda. Cressanda's lucky that she didn't have to face these people, these 22 people that missed the airline flight in person, that she had to face them in the courthouse. Because you talk about piss some people off. Doing stuff like that. And then what she basically, her defense was, she defended herself. She basically said, if you believe that the protest causing the delays was intended to create meaningful positive change, would you have defined the delay as serious inconvenience, which is what she was charged with? Or would you have experienced it as a proportionate and manageable inconvenience given the policy change that the protest was seeking to achieve, which literally would save thousands of lives in the coming decades? Number one, Gethin, you have no idea if you're going to save lives. I tell you this much, though, causing traffic jams doesn't help lives. The fact that you climbed a gantry and had to be rescued means that you put lives in danger. And then I love what the judge said, basically, but it's about climate change is not admissible because it's not relevant to what you did,
right,
which is very true. I'm loving the fact that municipalities and governments and companies now are starting to not be worried about what would happen in the court of public media, and they're actually taking these protesters to court. If these protesters and these anti-oil and gas groups are able to take the oil and gas industry to court for years and years and years, a lot of it, which is just nuisance cases,
right,
I think it's okay that we actually take them to court when they actually endanger people's lives or property, which is what this was. She's going to be sentenced on May 3rd. I'm going to pay attention to this and see what type of sentence she get. What she got charged for in the U.S. would be a misdemeanor. It's not how they classify stuff in the U.K.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think she's going to spend any jail time, but she will have a record. And if she does it again, she will actually spend some jail time.
Good.
So I'm going to keep an eye on this.
Yeah. And I sent you a video the other day of a radio personality in the U.K. whose friend died because... Sorry, Tucker. The woman's friend died in an ambulance because Just Stop Oil was standing in the street.
Oh, I do remember you sending me that.
Yeah. Right?
She's on her way to hospital in an ambulance, and the street protest caused by Just Stop Oil kept her from getting the hospital time, and she passed away, unfortunately. Don't get me wrong. I do not believe that Just Stop Oil want people to die. I think that was something that happened that they didn't foresee.
Right.
However, it shows you what happens. There's legal ways to protest, and I support that in any democracy, any constitutional republic. You have the right to protest according to your
country's
laws. Support that 100%. However, what Just Stop Oil has done in the UK and what some of these other groups have done around the world are not legal, and they need to be prosecuted.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm not going to lie, though. It was kind of funny. Not that this person died.
Oh, no. It was a close friend of hers. Yeah, but this, yeah, they deserve everything they get. If you're not going to do it peacefully and get out of the way, then, yeah, you get what you sow.
Speaking of getting what you sow, what's the next news article?
Shell backs out of yet another floating offshore wind project.
Shell, I love you to death. Just call me. I can keep you from making these mistakes.
I feel like you should be on the board.
I wouldn't mind sitting on the Shell board. The only problem is there's a lot of Dutch people there. I love my Dutch people, but they love consensus. Everybody has to agree before they do anything. That's not quite my personality. Anyway, back to this. This is a 1.2 gigawatt Munu Aram project in South Korea, and Shell selling its 80% stake back to its joint venture partner, Hexagon, which means that Hexagon's now going to own 100% of this project. Hexagon, I'm telling you right now, sell this thing as quickly as you can because you're not going to make any money at it. The best you could
clearly
do is cut your losses. But anyway, Shell's jumping out of this project, and they're doing it because they're losing money at it. And you've heard me talk about this before. The strategy that Shell and BP had a few years ago to heavily invest in renewables has not paid off for them. It was a risk they took that just didn't work out. Last year, Shell also stepped out of a couple of other wind projects, and I suspect that Shell's going to step out the rest of their wind projects, not all of their renewable, but the rest of their wind projects in the next year or so, as it makes legal and fiscal sense, depending on the contracts that they sign and what that look like. But Shell's basically struggling. I say it's struggling. They're killing it. But compared to their competition, they're struggling because of these investments, and they need to exit these and go back to their core business,
right,
which is hydrocarbons. Now, this article is actually in Oil Price, and it bothers me, Paige. About the fifth paragraph in here, it says Big Oil. And it says Big Oil has profited more than $250 billion since the start of the Russian-Ukraine war. Let's set that straight. Big Oil is a myth that has been made up by people that don't like our industry.
Yeah.
Just number one. Let's look at the U.S. About 90% of the hydrocarbons that are produced in the U.S. is not produced by Exxon, Shell, BP, Chevron. It's produced by independent operators.
Right.
Family-owned businesses.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Also, the big oil companies I just rattled off don't have the most barrels under reserve in the world. Most barrels under reserve are owned by the nationalized oil company, who are squeezing these companies out of being able to operate wherever they want to. And then this profit thing. I'm tired of people talking about the profits we made. It's 100% true. In the last 18 months, 20 months, the industry as a whole, especially the Chevron, BP, Shell, and Chevron, have profited $250 billion. You know how much money we lost, Paige, in 2015 as an industry?
Oh, gosh, no.
$290 billion. So in 1 year, in a bad year for us, we lost more than this profit everybody keeps talking about. How many people have you heard talk about that?
Nobody, because I didn't even know that.
Yeah. Oil Price, do better. Read what your writers are putting in. You should not use the word big oil.
Take it from the editor-in-chief.
Yeah, take it from the editor-in-chief. And if you're going to talk about the profits this industry made, which is right, that's a legitimate number. We have made these type of profits. Talk about the losses in the same sentence or two so that people get balance there.
It's all about agenda, Mark.
Yeah. Anyway, Shell's stepping out of this wind project. I fully suspect Shell will step out of all of their wind projects. This is just another way to – they're not bleeding badly. They're kind of dripping profits right now. But they're trying to stop the dripping. I don't want to say stop the bleeding. They're going to stop the dripping.
Actually, I don't like that. That sounds gross. Anyway, UK quits treaty allowing oil firms to sue governments over climate policy.
Yeah, this is interesting. So there was a treaty done back in the mid to late 90s called the Energy Charter Treaty. And basically, it allowed – oil and gas companies to sue governments if the governments put in policies that hurt their profit margin based upon climate. So let me explain an example.
And this is back in the 90s?
Yeah, in the 90s.
Uh-huh.
Let me explain.
Oh, ozone stuff. Yeah,
example,
yeah, yeah.
Right? Let's say that we'll pick a big oil company number one. Let's say big oil company number one is operating in California in the 90s. And during that time, there was a problem with hydrogen sulfide being released.
Uh-huh.
And that hydrogen sulfide in the atmosphere caused the rain to become acidic. And we had something like acidic rain.
Right.
Then people in state municipalities like California would then turn around and sue that oil company. And that oil company then would be liable for whatever compensation that the court would decide. So compensation would not have been based upon facts. It would have been based on, in this imaginary scenario I'm making up, all the acid rain in the U.S. was caused by this one oil company in California, right? That was a risk that the oil companies around the world didn't want to have to deal with. They deal with the risk of their actual impacts to the environment when it's legit. What they didn't want to deal with is the perception and the projected of possible impacts to the environment in the future. So this pact came together. The countries that pulled this thing together did it on purpose to continue to have the oil and gas companies do business in their countries because they needed the energy and they wanted the jobs. So what happens now is this agreement has not been changed since the 90s, and it's really outdated. What's happening is a lot of companies that were part of this agreement, a lot of countries that were part of this agreement have tried to update it. But unlike the 90s, when the oil and gas industry and the environmentalists could at least talk to each other civilly and come to agreement, now that's not happening. What's happening is they can't get anybody to agree to change this agreement to modernize it. So countries, in this case, the UK, just says, you know what, screw it. We're just out of it. It's not worth us trying to administer and adhere to outdated legalese if we can't update it. And we can't update it because the environmentalists and the oil and gas companies can't sit at the same table and come to agreement like they used to 20, 30 years ago in the 90s. So I think this is actually a really good move. Of course, the environmentalists are calling this a win, basically saying this is a hugely flawed treaty and it's a brilliant win for the environment and the climate because now we can sue the big oil companies. Good luck with that.
Yeah.
This is a direct quote by Kara Box of Friends of Earth. So, Kara, good luck suing the big oil companies. I don't know if you've noticed, but it hasn't worked anywhere.
Oh, before we get to the next one, huge shout out to Delfina Govia for subbing in for me.
For the first Friday Q&A.
Yeah, that was really great.
It was very nice, sir.
Yeah, awesome. Okay, so next we got armed group shuts down Libya's
Al-Zawiya.
That one, refinery.
Yeah. Shut down the refining, also two other storage facilities. You know why they're taking control? This is sad.
Why?
They haven't paid in 8 months.
Bro.
They have families to support. It's usually hard for me to side on the side that does terrorist-like
activities.
Well,
that's usually when crime goes up is when people aren't making any money.
But this is the Petroleum Facilities Guard, and they've been very clear they're not aligned to any current political factions. They're not tied to any type of political or religious movement. All they want to do is get paid. And the government promised them 3 months ago they would get paid.
Oh, snap.
Didn't. Yeah. All the official promises have failed. The last one was from the prime minister, the governor of national unity. And he asked basically the government would go ahead and fund the needed payroll to pay these people and go ahead and grant them their rights to not be prosecuted because they were demanding being paid. However, nothing happened. Nobody got paid. This group has picked up arms, took control of the refinery, and like I said, two other oil facilities. And all they're asking for is the government to pay them and to then not have any type of repercussions because they basically used arms to take over the refinery, the two other facilities. Hard one for me to make a judgment call on this. I will say this much, though. I hope nobody gets hurt. I hope the government figures a way to pay these people. And I hope if there is a repercussions, make it fair on both sides. Nobody needs to work for free. And this part of the world has had so many decades of strife. And I could see how these people just want to make sure they feed their families and have a roof over their heads.
Yeah.
We're going to keep an eye on this one as well.
Yeah. Okay. ConocoPhillips EVP Macklin retires after 33 years with the company.
Dominique, I've actually met him twice. I don't think he would remember me, but he's been there for a very long time. Unfortunately, it says that he is stepping down because of medical reasons. He started back in 1991, actually just a few years before that treaty was signed, we just talked about. He's done everything at ConocoPhillips you could possibly think of: engineering, business development, operations, mid-level leadership, senior-level leadership. He led the company's lower 48 business for seems like forever, and then got into corporate planning and development, got later into technical, IT, sustainable development, and low carbon technology, which is where he is now. He's got back out of that. I will tell you something that, and congratulations for his retirement. Congratulations for all the contributions he's made to ConocoPhillips.
Sounds like quite the career, yeah.
Yeah, but I will tell you something that nobody knows about him. He's one of the founding members of Spindletop. And he goes, Spindletop, that sounds familiar. That's where the U.S. oil and gas industry geographically got its start.
I thought so.
But it's also a nonprofit that does what? I'm going to cry.
Don't cry. You're going to make me cry. Don't stop.
So Spindletop is a nonprofit that benefits the children of people that work in the oil and gas industry that lose their lives. You don't know that much about Dominic, but the fact that he's dedicated himself to help kids from around the world whose parents unfortunately lost their lives in the industry through his charitable contributions is great. I wish him a long and healthy career outside of ConocoPhillips. I don't think they've named his successor yet, but we'll keep an eye on this.
Okay. U.S. EPA grants fuel policy change promoting blend with higher ethanol. Let me put this in here just to piss you off.
So our current administration, by law, is making the refiners produce a gasoline that produces more pollution, and it will cause the cost of gasoline to go up. But they're delaying it for almost 2 years because they don't want it to affect this election cycle. And the real reason they're doing it is so they can tell people that we're using more ethanol, which is biofuel. That's in a nutshell is what this is. By law, many parts of the U.S. are required to mix 10% ethanol with the gasoline at the refinery level. We've talked about it a whole bunch. That's not good for the environment. It's not good for the refinery. Basically, it's the government making the refineries buy a competitive product and mix it in their fuels. And it's a competitive product that's substandard. It's not good for your engines. And I know all my tuner bros out there are screaming at me going, Mark, those Hopto turbos love the cooling effect of that ethanol. I get it. I drive one of those cars too, but it absorbs water out the air. It's not good for the engine. You can't move around the pipelines because it absorbs water out the air. It's a mess. What's happening here is the ethanol producers who make, quite frankly, make money from government subsidies, the corn producers, have wanted to increase the amount of ethanol and fuel from 10% to 15%. Nobody's allowed that to happen forever. Now it looks like our current administration will.
Of course.
So it's going to be called E15 gasoline, which, like I said, contains 15% ethanol instead of 10, which is known as E10. This is being pushed by the nation's top corn and ethanol producing states, all the square states in the middle of the country.
Midwest, baby.
Which is hilarious because the majority of the E85 vehicles are sold in the East and West Coast where there's no E85 or even E15 fuel. By the way, if you own an 85 vehicle, it makes no difference if you put normal gasoline in it. Just FYI, California buyers.
Might be cheaper for them, though.
Well, no, because it costs more money to put ethanol in.
I was being facetious.
Yeah. What's going to happen when this thing hits, it's kicked off, is the pipeline operators and the fuel refiners are going to have to put more money into infrastructure because of the corrosive water-absorbing properties of ethanol. It's going to cost the consumer anywhere between 2 and 12 cents more a gallon when they buy this E15 fuel. And the reason that we haven't allowed this to happen is because it puts more particulates in the air, pollution. This is one of those things that make no sense other than somebody wanting to make sure they get votes. This is just a mess. We need to get rid of the renewable fuel standards in this country.
And all completely. The politicians.
Yeah, and all of the politicians. I agree on both sides.
Everybody.
Normally, this is where I say I'll keep an eye on this. I'm going to try to go to sleep and forget this.
Oh, no. I'm just going to keep adding this in here. It's kind of funny when you get a little flustered.
It's aggravating.
I know. I've had several people tell me they like it when you get a little feisty about stuff.
Well, wait till behind the curtain.
Okay. Texas Blockchain Council takes legal action against the DOE's Energy Information Administration overreach.
This is interesting. There's a lot going on here. So basically, DOE, Department of Energy, reached out to all the major crypto mining companies out there. If you don't know what that means, I'll try to give you a short version. Basically, cryptocurrency is, I'm going to get hate mail for this. It's a virtual currency. I want to say it's a made-up currency. It's not. It's a virtual currency whose value is dependent on supply and demand, just like everything like gold. And the one I'm most familiar with is Bitcoin. And Bitcoin has a finite number of Bitcoins out there. And in order to get a Bitcoin, you have to solve mathematical problems. So think of very advanced math problems, and people use computers to do that. And if you solve enough math problems, you earn a Bitcoin. And then, like I said, that Bitcoin's value is determined by supply and demand.
That sounds miserable.
Yeah. And so people mine Bitcoins, a bunch of computers running mathematical operations to solve problems to mine cryptocurrency. Bitcoin's one of the cryptocurrencies. So what's going on here is our current administration through the DOE has decided to target all of these miners, and they're asking for an amazing amount of what I would consider personal identifiable information, or at least proprietary. They want the specifications of the machines, so the computers that these people are using in each facility. They want the exact physical location of the mining operations. They want the exact word-for-word copies of the contractual information relating to each one of the commercial partners, so basically everybody that's making money or losing money on this, along with a whole bunch of other stuff. Now, what this article is talking about is that, and this is being held, being spearheaded by Texas Blockchain Council, which seems like everything against the federal government is spearheaded by Texas something. But according to Texas Blockchain Council, this legal action is much needed because they think the government's overstepping their bounds. And it's a legal challenge to help defend the people that are not only cryptocurrency miners, but people that use cryptocurrency for transactions to buy things. I actually agree 100%. I don't understand why the government needs all this information unless they want to be able to track everything.
Oh, that's exactly what they want.
Yeah. Now, here's the other thing. Guess who else is being pulled in this by the DEA? The EIA, and the EIA wants information on how much power these crypto mining organizations use to the watt. Then They're actually looking at the EPA wanting to come in to look at how these cryptocurrency miners are affecting the environment.
Oh, seriously?
So to me, this is very much our federal government overstepping
something. Oh, absolutely.
And I think the reason they're overstepping this, quite frankly, I don't think they understand cryptocurrency. I think
they don't understand petroleum.
Yeah, I think they see this as some type of weird threat.
Oh, absolutely.
And they want complete control. And the only way complete control is to understand the complete
situation. They just want their hand in everything.
Yeah, and one of the advantages of cryptocurrency is you skip the government. You don't need the federal
That's the whole reserve. Point.
At Texas Blockchain Council is taking them.
More people need to be.
Yeah. And I support them 100%. I am not a crypto guy, but I am definitely a freedom to practice your business without the government stepping in guy. Definitely. So 100%. In fact, I may even reach out to Texas Blockchain to see if they want to talk about this a little bit and explain it more.
Oh, that would be really good for the balance point.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Right on. I'll even listen to that. Next up, we've got Shell begins production from subsea tieback in U.S. Gulf of Mexico.
You know what subsea tieback is?
My dad works on that kind of stuff, so yeah.
For our audience doesn't know, so basically, when you're offshore, especially if you're far away from shore, the cheapest way, the most environmentally safe way to get those hydrocarbons that you're getting from the bottom ocean floor is through a subsea pipeline. And all around the world, including the Gulf of Mexico, which is this article is talking about, you have pipelines that are built there that other companies built just to help the production companies get their hydrocarbons back to market. So, for instance, Chevron has a huge pipeline or several pipelines in the Gulf of Mexico that they allow their competitors to use for a fee to get their hydrocarbons back to market back on shore. So
right.
That's what's going on here. So Shell's tapping into the subsea tieback for Atomonix production hub. This is in the Mississippi Canyon. So this is a deep water project. It's about 7,400 feet of water. If I remember right, I think Shell was one of the first operators to actually go into production.
I think you're correct on that.
Mexico.
Yeah.
This is great. This is bringing more hydrocarbons to market in an environmentally responsible way from an operator that is very versed in that part of the Gulf of Mexico. And then you're looking at hundreds of millions of barrels of hydrocarbons that the world needs being brought to market. This is like really cool news.
Yeah. I think, and I could be completely wrong on this, I think the first subsea tieback they did was off of Bullwinkle.
Could be.
Yeah. So, okay. All right. Guyana won't approve oil exploration near Venezuela until the United Nations rules in Venezuelan border dispute.
Yeah, Maduro screwed all this up. I had so high hopes for him.
I never did. Nope.
I did, but anyway. If you don't know, there's a border dispute. Basically, Venezuela saying they own everything in the world, all the way up to Guyana, where Exxon's made these huge discoveries. Guyana's saying, you know what? While this is in dispute with Venezuela, especially since there's some armed troops on the border, we're just not going to do anything until we get this thing settled.
I mean, fair.
No, I think it's actually very smart on a couple of different points. Number one, you don't want to start awarding contracts and having the operators go in production if minor warfare breaks out.
Right.
Number two, if you don't wait and you start production now and there is some type of conflict and you lose, you have now basically built the infrastructure for the bad guys that took over
your
offshore waters. Mm-hmm. And I think this is smart. I think Maduro is rapidly losing credibility with his world peers other than our current administration, who's being buddy-buddy with him because he's helping us keep the price low at the pump while we head to election season. That'll disappear as soon as we get through the election.
Yeah.
And even ExxonMobil is honoring this, saying, you know what, we're going to wait as well. Actually, I love their quote. If we can't access it, we can't follow through on our obligations.
Right.
Or our rights to such times as force majeure is lifted by the Guyanese government. So we're not going to push into any activities in that area until this is settled, which I think is the right thing to do. It protects lives. It's a good strategy from a business point of view. It's also a good strategy from
Exxon
point of view.
That's what they do. Okie doke. Next up, Total Energy's Texas refinery running at minimal rates.
And we talked about this, how they had an outage based upon an electricity problem. I still haven't found out what that problem was, but they're still not up to where they need to be. So they're running at minimum rates. This is after the electrical problems, after a startup, which was planned maintenance. They had multiple heaters go down. And if you remember when this is all going on, it got kind of cold in Texas, although this is still an electrical problem. We're going to keep an eye on this. I can't believe this refinery is not back up and running yet. The electrical problems they had must have been more pervasive than I thought.
Probably.
We're going to keep an eye on this. With this lack of refining in any other part of the country, it would cause retail fuel prices to spike. Because we have so many refineries in the Gulf Coast, right now it's not affecting price at the pump at all. It is affecting the price at some of the other products like polypropylene and naphtha. But right now, we're still a good place.
And that was one of the refineries that were running to the max for a long time.
Years.
Right, so they probably just found something after taking it offline to do maintenance and was like...
They should have been back up. They had multiple outages caused by an electrical problem. And like I said, they're running at minimal capacity. They're still not back up. So we'll keep an eye on this.
Yeah. Okay. Enterprise acquires JV interests from Western Midstream.
So huge pipeline company buys little pipeline company. Because this is the time to buy stuff. This is time for mergers and acquisitions. They bought basically 170 barrel per day pipeline company from Western Midstream. They now, I think, own 100% of Western's assets. Mm-hmm. This is just another acquisition in the pipeline business. You remember my predictions that the pipeline infrastructure market was going to boom in the U.S.?
Right.
And actually, the pipeline infrastructure boom that I'm waiting for is being held back because of our current election. There's money.
Of course it is.
Projects. Things are built out right away. Contracts are signed. Nobody's pulled a trigger on it until we get through this election cycle, which is right around the corner at the end of this year. However, you're seeing stuff like this happens. This is good for everybody. EPP runs a tight ship. And with this added capacity, they're going to be able to offer their countries much better deals on transport, which then lowers the price for everything, including maybe the price at the pump.
All right. Next up, Enbridge says Canada oil pipeline congestion may continue even once TMX starts.
I should have anticipated this, but I didn't. So how long have we been talking about the Trans Mountain expansion?
For long time. Yeah, a couple years.
Let me tell you how long we've been talking about it. This is that pipeline that was delayed forever. Price went up. The government had to step in and buy it. Blah, blah, blah. A bunch of public pushback, indigenous people pushback. They finally got everything done. It has been so long since they start this project that basically what they're saying is when they bring this online, it's not going to help. Like the demand has grown so much that it's not going to be a big help. This is a 1,500 barrel per day Trans Mountain expansion project. They're going to max out as soon as they flip this thing on. It's going to be full. They have contracts signed, and there's still going to be a shortage of transport in that area, which is crazy to think about.
Right.
It's sort of like there's an interstate in your state, and they're going to move it from 2 lanes to 6 lanes because there's a lot of traffic. And by the time they finish the 6 lanes, they really need 12 lanes. This is the exact same type of thing.
It sounds like Katy, Texas.
If people don't know, just Google it. The widest interstate in the world is in Katy, Texas. I think it's 20 lanes, I-10.
24 lanes across lanes. I-10. But it's the congestion on 99 I'm talking about. They're expanding right now to more lanes. But by the time they're done with that, they're going to need more.
Well, the crazy thing about the huge interstate in Katy on I-10 is go drive it about 5:15 on a weekday. It's bumper to bumper. Like you've never seen this wide an interstate ever. And it's still maxed out.
Well, that's what the feeders too.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Nobody's moving to Texas now.
Well, capital of the world over here, people. Okay, last one. Apache Corporation remedies pollution's concerns with multi-million dollar settlements. So whenever I said earlier that I put bad stuff in here that happens in this industry, this is a great example because, I mean, Apache.
Yeah, basically Apache violated the Clean Air Act, which is back from the late 70s or early 80s, at 23 of its assets in New Mexico and also in Texas. They were warned multiple times, both orally, written. All that stuff was filed in the appropriate agencies. The EPA finally had to come back and fine them for their basically venting volatile organic compounds and nitrous oxide to the atmosphere. And if you don't know that nitrous oxide, when you vent it, turns into ground level ozone, which is not pretty. You know what? This is good. Apache, pay your fines.
And don't do it again.
Learn your lesson and don't do it again. This is something that needed to be done. I'm always a champion for our industry. I'm always protecting our industry. But when our industry screws up, we need to be called out on it.
Well, and that'd be the company to do it.
Yeah. And Apache basically just didn't pay attention. And honestly, they got multiple warnings, which tells me.
They just ignored it.
Yeah. I'm glad they got fined. And I hope they learn their lesson. If they don't, I hope the government doubles the fines and hits them again. So just stop doing stuff like this, Apache.
Don't be a dumbass.
Don't be a dumbass. Don't make us all look bad. You want to make us look good? Really easy. Go to sign up for our two newsletters. Something a little bit different, our Sunday update. A lot of newsletters out there have job postings. We decided not to do that. Now, you know, that is helpful. What we want to help is the individuals.
Well, a couple of people were successful, so.
You're not listening.
What?
Yes, you're not listening.
No, I'm not listening. I'm actually trying to look up other data for our next segment. Yeah.
So a lot of newsletters have job postings. We decided not to do that. We want to help you, the individual. Yeah. So what we're doing is putting people that are looking for work. So if you or somebody you know is looking for a job and you can vouch for them for being a good person, send them our way. We will put them in our Sunday update in a section we call it One at Jobs That Don't Suck, because people don't want jobs that suck. And we will helpfully promote their job hunting ventures for free, because it's just an easy way to give back, and it's way more personal than just listing jobs that are open. Also, check out our Oil and Gas Events newsletter. So we have all the oil and gas events in there. We have a bunch of things we're going to be at in the next month. We're going to be at CERAWeek. We're going to be at Carbon Capture and Storage. I think we're at a golf game this Friday. We're at some hydrogen thing somewhere. I have about 8 speaking gigs this year, so we're getting really busy. Speaking of all that, if you want myself to come deliver a keynote or any of our experts to come to your golf game, to your happy hour, do a live podcast, deliver a keynote, do industry-specific speeches, let me know. Happy to share the details. Also, while you're out there, go check out the LinkedIn company page. Just sign up for that. It's where all the cool stuff's being notified first, including our next mixer in March. Weekly rig count page, where are we?
All right, we'll just go with the rig count instead of frac count. U.S. is up 5 at 626. Canada is down 3 at 231. Internationally, we're up 10 at 965.
Yeah, and when you heard Paige mention frac count, we're bringing on a new partner for the show that has some amazing data taken from satellites. They actually do rig count as well, but just in the lower 48. They actually have visuals on the actual frac crews. So one of the things we're going to add starting really soon is, besides our rig count,
it's called SimMax.
Yep. We're going to tell you what the frac crew count is, whether it's up or down or staying even, which is really great information. Probably in some ways more valuable than the rig count. So stay tuned for that. Love those guys. We just have to wait till we get to the next show to actually start putting out their data. All right, Paige, ready to get out of here?
I am.
Remember, folks, do great work, pay it forward, and we will see you next time.
Tune in next week for another informative and entertaining episode of Oil and Gas This Week podcast, a production of the Oil and Gas Global Network. Learn more at oggn.com.